Hello, welcome to the Devil's Trident podcast from, once again, from the top of the league as Manchester United drew at Anfield, 0-0 with Liverpool. I'm Simon, I'm here with Matt.
Hello.
And I'm also here with James.
Hi there.
Hello, how are we doing, guys? Are we happy? Are we middling? Are we disappointed? What are we feeling about that result?
I wouldn't say disappointed at all. I'd say that I'm fairly happy with where we are and what we got from the game. Again, as we were speaking, like before the game, we were happy about essentially having a point for a draw. So I'm quite happy to take a point, really.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think you can ever go to Anfield at any point, really, and be too disappointed with the draw unless, I don't know, they've gone down to 10 men or something. You know, unless there's something major happen, I think usually a draw at Anfield is a good result, and other than maybe, well, even when they were poor for a good few years, I mean, it was still a tough place to go and a tough crowd to deal with for the players. So, yeah, I think a point is always decent there.
I think that, again, like you said, at the start of the day, you'd have taken a point. No doubt about it. I think Ollie would have taken a point as well. But just, it's football's such a weird game in that respect, because as the match wore on, and it's just those last 15 minutes, I think it was, and you just start to think then, really, like, what if? So it's the only thing that dampens the result. Not only that, but sort of maybe a creeping sense of dread, knowing that, I mean, Man City are, what is it, a point behind us now?
Yeah, no, is it 2 points behind?
2 points, yeah, with that game in hand.
Yeah, game in hand.
And who does that remind you of from like 2 weeks ago or something? So yeah. It's, you know, it could be fleeting. And a win today would have been absolutely amazing, as we know. We didn't get it. Mixed feelings. But you got to be positive, aren't you, coming away from Anfield with a point?
Yeah, when you compare it to recent seasons at Anfield, I mean, we had a couple of, I think, 0-0 draws under Jose, the boring games that got built up and ended up really under-delivering. I don't think that was like that, though. I think that today was an entertaining game. But more importantly, we were always in it. I mean, we definitely weathered a storm in the early stages. That first half an hour, it looked like Liverpool could get a goal. But they looked more adept at holding them off these days, where it wasn't like an avalanche of chances. Liverpool were still having a lot of pot shots from outside the box, and yeah, they're having a lot of possession in and around our area, but they weren't really doing anything with it. I mean, according to the stats app that I use, the StatZone app, there was only 3 big chances in the game, and Liverpool had one of them, and it was the Firmino one in the first half that he skied with his left foot, similar to the one that Martial missed, actually, against Burnley on Wednesday, or Tuesday, sorry. So, yeah, Liverpool didn't create too much, even if they had, like, twice the amount of shots as us. I think, generally, we created the better chances and really came into the game after the first half an hour.
Yeah, I completely agree. It seemed like if we were going to get anything from the game, it was dependent on that first half an hour, easily. Because, I mean, we knew that they were going to come out and challenge us and try and get that goal, but thankfully they've not been scoring in the last 3 games, so there must be something there that makes them like not as confident in front of goal as they probably should do, and it worked in our favour. I mean, we played well. We defended really well, even with the changes at the back with Lindelof for Bailly. We still managed to get through it quite well, and then yeah, after that, I would have thought it was quite even.
Yeah,
really, for possession and for chances and for just your overall feeling of the game. There was a lot of like periods where you thought that, I don't know, Liverpool had more of the ball and they might get some chances and they might get a goal in. And then there was a few times where we might have done that, but it was really only the first 30 minutes that had Liverpool better than us for a long period of time. After that, it was pretty much anyone's, which is cool. That's good to see, going to Anfield and being able to challenge Liverpool and play them at their own game, and yeah, give it to them.
Go toe to toe with them, rather than Exactly. Rather than going there defending and hoping and hanging on. And
yeah, because we can't do that anyway. So it's just a shame that we couldn't really find that final ball because, well, Rashford. We spoke about it before in previous podcasts, but that man cannot stop being offside.
No, he doesn't need to go as early as he keeps going, does he? He's fast enough to beat it. And I think there was a few occasions where he's actually unlucky, and sometimes it's to do with him wanting the ball played quicker, I think. And he came unstuck in that regard. Like there was one with Pogba where I think it was Rashford on the halfway line. Mm. And if Pogba passes it half a second earlier, Rashford's in. I mean, ultimately he didn't get the ball in the end anyway from the ball. So,
but yeah, that maybe you're right though, because I mean a lot of the times where Rashford is through on goal and he's played that through ball, it's normally like the likes of Bruno or maybe Greenwood or Fred or someone like that who's quicker on the ball to do that. But we know that Pogba likes to take it down, take a second, and play that long like lofty pass or that through ball. But he's more. It takes a bit of time on the ball, Pogba. Yeah. So maybe that's the reason why, because there was a lot of times where Pogba was doing that, and there were a lot of them kind of passes from Fernandes today. But I think that may be the way that the position that he was playing. There was a reason why he wasn't doing that.
Yeah, I thought they set up different today. I don't know if anybody else saw it like this, because I've not seen anybody else mention it. Well, I've not spent a lot of time on Twitter really throughout the game and afterwards. But to me, it looked like a 4-4-2 today, more than anything. Especially when we were sat back defensively anyway, it looked like Martial and Pogba were really wide. And Bruno was pretty close to
Rashford. And quite deep at times as well. I don't expect Martial to be that far back at times, but he was. We spent a lot of the first half in our own half, which is weird to see. But it's good that he wants to pick up the ball and go, but it's just, yeah, we were not really expecting that kind of, like, positioning from likes of Martial and Pogba?
No, and especially Martial with, considering Rashford's probably typically the one that's better going back and better defensively, and Martial has been the centre forward recently, and yeah, it was a bit of a strange one.
Yeah, there were some warning signs as well in the early stages, as you've alluded to. I mean, by no means did we turn up today to defend or park the bus or any sort of nonsense like that, but defend we had to. At times, like, they really came at us. They came straight for us, and they were giving it everything. And it was alluded to on the commentary as well, the fact that Pogba was playing sort of out wide, but he had Andy Robertson sort of pelting at him and past him, and would he be able to come and track back? Would he be interested in that kind of the game? Part of the game, sorry. But that's not a criticism of Pogba, it's just some players aren't fit, you know, those kinds of players. So, yeah, they asked a lot of questions of us. And, yeah, we just, through grit and ability as well, we were able to find our way past that, you know, and we didn't concede. Because I think you talk about the fact that Liverpool were there to be got at because they had two central midfielders at centre-back.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but it's irrelevant if they were to shoot out the traps and get two goals early doors, and then we're up against it, we've got a mountain to climb. So, yeah, for the limited amount of sort of actual chances they had, they were killing us with possession.
Yeah.
Like, they were it was pretty scary at times because, I mean, I couldn't breathe watching it. Like, I felt so suffocated by it.
It was a tense one, wasn't it?
Yeah, and in the sense that when we did get the ball, and you see this, you know, teams playing against City as well, like sometimes, you know, you get the ball and you better make the most of it when you've got it because you might not see it again. I hate to compare these kind of teams to, but again, it is what it, I mean, it's faint praise, but it's praise. It's begrudging praise. But that Champions League final, I think it was the 2010 one, you know, when United were in the game, but Barca would just suffocate them with possession and United had to be very quick when they had the ball and use it wisely. And sometimes we had Fred and McTominay in midfield and they weren't particularly doing that. Like, Fred was scooping it at times and just, I don't know, it's really hard to play against that, obviously, as every team can attest to in the Premier League. They've had that kind of, you know, task of playing against this Liverpool team when they press that high and all that. Yeah, it's really weird. I've watched it against other teams this season and finally it was time to sort of actually watch it against us and how are we going to cope? And yeah, wow, they don't give you a second on the ball to think sometimes, you know, they're really at you. And that's no surprise to anybody. But yeah, we weathered the storm and we made it a sort of equal contest. And it's funny with Micah Richards, really, you know, at half time, in between bouts of giggling his head off.
Yeah, it was a bit negative.
Was able to sort of criticise our style of play. But again, I think anyone would agree that it's about, you know, they are the league champions. And
you have to manage the game as well, don't
you?
Yeah,
it's game management. You don't want to go 2-0 down. It's not parking the bus. It's just when we get the ball, we'll use it. And like you say, yeah, Rashford offside many times. And yeah, but it was tough for us at the start, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think we came into it around the half an hour mark. There was a couple of sketchy bits before that. I think we were getting caught trying to play out from the back and Maguire gave the ball away at one point, and it was just, you kind of felt that we're building ourselves up to get even more nervy and not really come into it. But we did come into it, and I think Luke Shaw had a big part to play in that. He had a lot of driving runs down the left. I think he got man of the match today. He at least got the United man of the match. And I think he got a lot of plaudits online afterwards. I'm not sure who got the actual man of the match during the game. But yeah, he was making a lot of busting runs down the left and getting us into good positions. I think he won the free kick that I'm pretty sure everybody thought was in, the Bruno one, which just whistled wide. He had the perfect amount of pace on it, and it really, for all, really looked like it was in, didn't it?
Yeah, Luke Shaw was just on another level today, and it's weird the fact that I wish he'd play like that every single week, because he was playing like he had no fear. I don't know if they were, the Liverpool backline were giving him that space to make them kind of runs, but you don't really often see him like cutting in and going through the middle and trying to like create space that way, because he didn't normally do that. He normally just does his run down the wing and tries to put a ball in. And
yeah, making beelines for the box, weren't he?
Yeah, it was weird. I don't know if he was, unless that might have been a game plan, trying to win a penalty of some sort by getting tucked down, maybe. I don't know, but
Getting into that area.
Because normally we're not very good at doing that. Like if he'd have tried doing that when we played against Burnley, then it probably would have been a different game altogether. But I know Burnley set up a different way, and obviously they're a bit more defensive that way. And obviously you're comparing a very good backline of Burnley against a makeshift Liverpool backline. But it was just good to see that. He'd been given the license to do that. Solskjaer probably like, right, you pace it. Once you're on the ball, just run, because you know that the likes of Henderson aren't going to be able to catch up with you and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was good to see him be proactive, because when he's proactive and when he's being like offensive, he's good.
Yeah,
and it's great to see, and it's a shame that we didn't really get any benefit out of that in the end, but. No, I'm very impressed with Luke. Fantastic game and man of the match for me. I think he said about 50 minutes into the game, but I said, turned to James and said, man of the match already, because fantastic.
Yeah, I know you're not his biggest fan, are you, James?
But no, but I'd have to agree with Matt 100% there. Today he really showed up and he took the fight to Liverpool, and he's improving week in, week out. But the thing about Luke Shaw is, yeah, it's not, I've been critical, but you've kind of got to call the game as you see it. It's not always about, it's weird. With
no agendas around here.
Well, no, there's no agendas, but if a player doesn't play too well, you don't want to get personal or dig them out as such, but you just call it as you see it. Some players, Rashford wasn't particularly very good today, was he?
No.
But, you know, that's not to say that next week he won't, you know. And I did say in the summer that if this team wanted to go places, perhaps they could level up on Luke Shaw, and they brought Telles in. I wasn't sure if that was going to be the end of Luke Shaw's kind of, you know, tenure or whatever, but long may this form continue, because over the past few years of Shaw, you've seen it's like peaks and troughs, and when he plays well, he plays really well, and he seems to be one of those. See, I'd liken it a little bit to Chris Smalling, only a little bit, because I think Smalling was like a confidence player, and he really needed to have the faith shown in him by his teammates and his manager, and to kind of believe that he was a top centre-half. And he was delivering performances under Van Gaal. We've alluded to it on the show before. But there was that season, I think 2015 or something like that.
Yeah, him and Blind.
Yeah, and he was called Mike Smalling. And
I was going to say, who's Chris Smalling?
Smaldini. and he was putting in performances like that. And Luke Shaw, I think, yeah, he needs that confidence. And they said on the coverage, maybe the signing of Alex Telles has sort of, yeah, like boosted him a little. Just
up the arse, yeah.
Exactly. So maybe, and it's a you know, but yeah, Shaw was really, really good, and you're right, he did win that free kick by charging. Usually my wordage when it comes to Shaw is he's scampering around. He does scamper, but no, he was kind of carrying the ball like a, I wouldn't go as far as to say Messi, but you know, he was gliding with the ball at times, and he got tucked down, and the free kick was very, very, very close. I said as it happened, as you can't get closer than that, really.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much all in agreement that we thought it went in.
After, we were also
about 3 seconds later, we were like, oh, it didn't go in. Oh, yeah. What? Oh, Jesus Christ.
We were also in agreement that we didn't necessarily want Fred taking it as well.
Yeah, it was a bit of a worry when you see Fred and Fernandez both like teeing it up, and you're like, oh no, just Fred, just take a step back.
That was the only time Fred got over the halfway line.
That yeah.
Might have been why Luke Shaw had the license to go forward, really, because McTominay and Fred did just sit today, didn't they? Apart from a few bursts from McTominay.
And I said that they'd do that as well. I was saying to James before we watched the game that I thought the reason why probably Lindelof was picked before over Baye is because we knew that Fred and McTominay would be sitting back a lot and really getting in front of the back four and adding a big line of defence.
Yeah.
To protect, obviously, the defence.
With Wan-Bissaka as well. Wan-Bissaka didn't really get forward too much either, did it? It was more Shaw and then Pogba, Bruno, no.
Well, yeah, to be fair, it makes a lot of sense because, I mean, Trent, out of him and Robertson, Trent's probably the weaker of the two centre-backs, full-backs, I mean. So it makes more sense to go against him because you know that his defensive mind is not as good, and you're probably going to be able to get more out of the game going down that side than you would do down the right.
Yeah. Other than that, I haven't got too many notes from the first half. There was a lovely little nutmeg from Martial on Trent Alexander-Arnold, which was a nice little saucy bit of play, but
gift that someone.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, it was fairly even. Yeah, Liverpool had the better of it, more possession. They had the better of the first half an hour. I think we probably had the last 15 minutes or so of it. But pretty even at half time, and yeah, I don't think the negativity from Micah Richards was necessarily warranted, I thought. Roy Keane called it more accurately. I know maybe we're going to think that.
Called it with his look, by the way. Piercing look through Mika's soul. Yeah. Like, how dare you?
I think he was right as well. The fact that Rashford was getting caught offside was a good indication that we're at least getting these breaks.
In the game, yeah.
These opportunities. I mean, they weren't nothing here offside calls. There were moments where there was genuinely good opportunities because Liverpool play quite high a lot of the time, don't they? So they do give you chances, and we know we're good on the break, so it always felt like something could happen. But yeah, 0-0 at half-time. I think we'll cover the whole game in one go, actually, because we've got other stuff to talk about later in the pod.
Oh.
So, start of the second half. I thought we started strong again. It was a bit of a back and forth. It was a bit like a basketball game for the first 10 minutes, where it was just, again, those four offensive players just creating half-decent chances around their box. But Wan-Bissaka was lucky. Not lucky not to give away a penalty, but he almost gave away a penalty with that tackle, that last-ditch stretch that he did. I think it was on, was it on Mane?
On Mane, so, yeah. If Mane would have gone down, that would have been, it would have been one of them moments that you think that all the papers the next day would have been like, oh, was it a penalty? Was it or not? Because I mean, there's enough of contact for him to go down, but it would have been a very soft decision. But again, it just doesn't really matter in these kind of like high stakes games because all it takes is one bit of slight indecision for you to pay for it.
Yeah, these games hinge on those big moments. I think Solskjaer loves the phrase fine margins, and it does tend to be with these sort of big games. You don't often get high scoring ones, really.
No.
Generally, I mean, all of United's big games, other than the one that we're not going to mention, have been pretty low scoring affairs. I mean, Chelsea 0-0, City in the league 0-0, Arsenal we lost at home 1-0 through a penalty. Today 0-0. Like, it has been really tight against the top teams, whereas, and arguably over Solskjaer's reign, or at least last year, we these have been the games that we were good at and we were crap in the other games. Right, it's kind of switched the other way around, but I don't think we were bad today. I saw a tweet, I can't remember who it was, by some football account, criticising us for our results in the big games so far this year, but what does it matter if you're top of the league?
That's mad. What I'm just going to slightly go back. To the challenge. Do you anyone see the thing that the interview with Mark Clattenburg this week?
Oh right, yeah.
With his not making the big calls in like the big games, especially with like Liverpool and United, where sometimes he felt like he was being forced to make decisions just by the pure fact that he had like the likes of Fergie on the bench who would be influencing the game off the pitch whilst it going on.
All right, no, I didn't see that, but I saw that he'd said stuff about Klopp trying to influence the referees with his comments, I think.
Yeah, but that's what he was saying that, but he was also backing up by saying, look, there's been times where I've refed games between Liverpool and United, and there's been chances that, like, retroactively, if I'd have looked at it, probably would have gone the other way, but I felt like I had to give them decisions just because of the kind of pressure that you get from the bench.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was met with a lot of very negative press from a lot of Liverpool supporters, obviously, and players, like especially Carragher. But it's just mad to think that if anything big would have happened in this game, it'd have been like, well, just making up for it from the stuff that happened in the past with Mark Clattenburg.
Yeah. It would have been different today as well with no crowd, though. There's not the same influence from the crowd, which probably does affect referees in some way.
Yeah.
Whether it's a big amount or not, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not going to question the morals or anything like that. But, yeah. Anyway, Liverpool still didn't really create too much in the second half. There was a cross from Robertson that came across Firmino, which looked like it could be finished off. One that Gary Neville described as delicious. A delicious cross. It was quite good.
Tasty. You'd eaten that right up.
But I thought the game changed on the hour mark when Cavani came on. Cavani made a huge difference today in his hold-up play, and I know you were particularly admiring his flicks round the corner today.
Yeah, and his appearance, his overall appearance, that statuesque figure. Yeah. Ooh. Speak about delicious. I joke, of course. But no, some of them first-time passes round the corner he likes to do to link up the play.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable, and it's not just, I wouldn't say a fluke, but it's not just like a little thing that he brings out every now and then. It's like, no, this guy can really do that.
Yeah.
And you can play around that. And it makes me wonder, again, not to be sort of, you know, after the fact, but maybe if he'd started, I don't know, you could maybe play a different way, but I'm not crying out that he should have started, but it just makes you think, maybe. But I knew when Martial was named, it was similar to the team that we predicted on the Devil, you know, yourself, yeah, on the Devil's Trident, and I was kind of, yeah, you put Pogba sort of out wide-ish.
Yeah.
Albeit to the left, but still, like, it accommodated him into the team, not to get off on a tangent, but yeah, Martial was named up front, and yeah, I was thinking, well, okay, no, you can go into the game, and you can have, you've got Cavani in your back pocket if you need to change the system up, and he did, like you say, Cavani came on, and yeah, it did change the game, it did, and I think he's very combative. I don't think Martial's particularly combative, like, for all his strengths.
Yeah.
He's not someone that necessarily grabs the game by the scruff of the neck, with his physicality, maybe. And, you know, you can cross a ball. He's going to attack the ball, isn't he, with his head and all that kind of stuff. It opens up a whole new corridor of
chances,
opportunity. Yeah, chances, opportunities from set pieces and all of that. But his link-up play is first class. I mean, I know of Cavani coming in to United before. Like, I've seen a few games of his. I don't want to claim to be an expert or anything. I just knew he was a statuesque sort of figure that could head a ball very, very, very hard and very, very, very accurately. Wasn't afraid to put his head in places that other players wouldn't necessarily put the boots. And he could, yeah, score all kinds of goals. And I knew about his crazy goal-scoring record. He's got a really good record, hasn't he? He's scored X amount of goals. I don't have the stats on me.
Is he PSG's all-time top goalscorer? I'm pretty sure he's...
Yeah, I'm not sure, but he's... Yeah, he's
It'd make a lot of sense if it was.
Yeah, he's got a
They don't have a great long illustrious history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, they don't. But they've got some goal scorers that have hit a few. I mean, like Pauletta, I want to say got quite a few. But the bar might not be as high as, you know, for instance.
Another United legend.
Well, yeah, maybe
we'll come,
not.
We'll come to him later. Hold your horse.
Oh, yeah, excited.
But yeah, he did change the game. He was winning free kicks and like you say, just laying the ball off people. And in the last 15 minutes, you felt like we could win it. Well, I certainly did. I thought there was a really good chance that Luke Shaw created again down the left of crossing for Bruno, which was just begging to be put in. Bit of a difficult one with how he had to shape his body to put it in with his side foot. Alisson made some great saves and probably saved it for Liverpool, really, because, again, Liverpool didn't really create massive chances in that half. There was that one that I mentioned for Robertson from Robertson's cross. A chance that Salah had from Luke Shaw giving it away, actually, which was his one down point.
That made it seem like it was more of a chance than it actually was. I think De Gea made it seem like it was more of a chance.
Mm.
De Gea probably could have caught that and put it, like, snuffed it out and not made a big deal out of it. But I don't know if that's just because of his sight of the ball or what, but it seemed like a bigger chance just because of the way that De Gea saved it. But I wouldn't have thought that was actually like a genuine chance.
That you mean Thiago's shot from outside, the one that he parried away?
Yeah.
But Thiago's that one, yeah. Thiago's shot. The Salah one was just a little bit before that, I think. But it just got deflected wide and they had a couple of corners and there was a bit of pressure. But again, nothing too much to worry us. I mean, we had a lot of tall players at the back just able to...
But you mean the tall guys?
The tall guys were forward and the tall guys were helping us at the back as well.
I want a sitcom with them three, just the tall guys.
They were the tall boys now, so it's...
It's Tominay, Pogba and Maguire, the tall boys.
The gang.
Tall guys. You can imagine them all stood like back to back with like Scott in the middle, like Charlie's Angel style. The tall guys.
Three men and a bebe. I
wonder what he's doing these days.
Two and a half man, eh? Oh, I've lost it now. Never mind.
Moving swiftly on. It was the last 10 minutes that we really could have won it. I mean, it got broke up eventually by... I think the game essentially got broke up by Scott McTominay going down and there being a whole farce around substitutions. But before that happened, Rashford went through, bursting through from the halfway line. And we really looked like we're in Edinson Cavani. He's going absolutely nuts at him for either not shooting or not laying it in. He just kind of, I don't know where he was going. He just overran it.
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking there. Again, like we've said, it wasn't Rashford's finest hour today. He kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit. But potentially, excuse me, you look back on this game, if he's able to either square that or to take a shot a bit earlier, you know, just try. I mean, we know that Marcus's shooting ability is really, really good on either foot, you know. So just Alisson's no mug, of course, in goal, but I don't know, it's getting on in the game. What he did was he sort of didn't make a decision.
Yeah.
And he sort of just kept running, and it was sort of like five-a-side level stuff where you get it muddled between your feet and you just go, oh, I'm going to keep going.
There was a bit old school Rashford that, weren't it, in his
early days.
Just a little bit of indecision. Maybe he just didn't have the angle to shoot from.
No, maybe not. I'd have to look at it back. But you're right when you say that, yeah, Cavani was going absolutely crazy because we can clearly, I mean, we've got the benefit of seeing the whole picture. So Cavani was, because it was like, was it 2-on-1 or something? I think it was 2-on-1 and you're thinking, just, there's two here.
It was three on two.
Yeah.
3-on-2, okay, yeah.
It was 3-on-2 because you had Pogba on the right and Rashford in the middle and Cavani who went left. So we could have easily played both of them on, but just didn't. He just ran himself into trouble, and then a third player came back into it.
Yeah, so that was a massive shame, you know, considering, because this is the kind of bit in the game where, because it sort of shifted, because it wasn't, like we keep saying, it wasn't a sense of, we go there, we hang on, we get a point, and we celebrate a point like it's the best thing ever because we came away with a point. It became a sort of, okay, well, let's not get beat, because fundamentally you don't want to get beat. Yes, the title rivals, of course. I mean, it sounds silly saying that, but you know what I mean? Currently, as Neville says, at this moment in time, they are rivals with us for the top spot. So you definitely don't want to lose, first and foremost, home or away. maybe especially away, some might argue. But it became, as the game progressed, we got more of it. We got more of the ball. We got more, we got the most clear-cut chances, I think, out of the game. That's actually a fact, isn't it? We got the most clear-cut chances. Yeah. Like, there might have only been two, but real, like you've said, nothing that Liverpool did. All right, there was a few gasps here and there, but it weren't like Salah's one-on-one and De Gea had to claw it out of the bottom corner, really. And whereas Alisson had to really pull a couple of saves out and Liverpool could have been beaten there. And that's kind of where you come away feeling a bit disappointed. But certainly, yeah, that last 15 minutes, things really started gearing up a little. And with some of these set pieces, and you're thinking, you know, the big lads, like you said, we've got some
the tall
really
guys.
Tall players in this team and that can really affect things from set pieces, but it just didn't fall for us. So, you know, a bit of a shame on that count.
It did fall for Paul Pogba pretty soon after Rashford's breakaway, actually. That, I think, arguably, that's the best chance of the game. Really good save from Alisson. I don't think Pogba could have done too much better.
Couldn't have done much better.
That's it. Can't speak tonight, which is not good when you're doing a podcast.
Well, it's been a good day, so the point at Anfield is a good reason to celebrate. So
are we celebrating? Yeah,
I'm celebrating. I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm happy enough, to be fair. I mean, you did want to win it late on, obviously, but it's not the end of the world. And I said in the preview that even a loss today isn't disastrous in the grand scheme of things. I mean, you don't want to lose, obviously, but in the race, you know, it wouldn't have done too much damage. A win would have been momentous. It would have been massive. And a draw was probably going to be about right. And as it materialised, it was a draw. So, yeah, not too dissatisfied with that. We got City breathing down our neck. Obviously, we'll come to that after the break. We'll have a little break and then we'll talk about the league situation, Mr. Wayne Rooney, and then we'll have a quick look ahead to Fulham. Hello, it's Simon again. I'm just here to quickly tell you listeners where to find us on social media. We're The Devil's Trident on Instagram and Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Devil's Trident. You can also keep up to date with us at thedevilstrident.com. Okay, on with the show. Okay, welcome back. Shall we just have a quick think about the Premier League table as it stands now then, since all of the title contending games are finished, since only Arsenal are left to play? Is it Arsenal?
Does it matter?
Who?
Doesn't really matter.
But it'd be a pleasure to look at the table, yeah?
Yeah.
It'd be a pleasure to see if it's Arsenal that are irrelevant next.
You know, just
Arsenal Newcastle tomorrow, so the game week isn't done. But in terms of where we are, it is. So City looked good tonight, didn't they? They're finding their form 100%, and sit 2 points behind us with the game in hand. So now we are the top team with the asterisks. But their game in hand is against Everton away.
A good Everton team as well this season.
Good Everton that would be right up there if they won that game, because it's just so close now.
When's that game in hand actually happening?
I don't know if they've rearranged it, you know.
Because Everton aren't as good at the moment because they don't have Calvert-Lewin. But you'd think that if it's going to be in a few weeks' time, that Calvert-Lewin would be back, which means that it's probably a more difficult game. Because, I mean, if City are still without, a lot of the big hitters.
Aguero
especially, yeah. And Jesus hasn't really played a lot of games. So without the big hitters, it's not a given, that game, at all.
No, it's not a given. It's also not been rearranged yet, so who knows? Yeah. Who knows when it'll be?
We want to get it arranged sooner rather than later, don't we?
Yeah, Premier League.
Yeah, sort it out.
So, yeah, we're still top, and Liverpool have kind of just dropped back into the mix of the teams all around similar points. I mean, our lead is only 2 points ahead of Leicester and City currently, but like we said, City have that game in hand. So it's interesting. We just need to keep winning. We got Fulham next, which we'll get to later. And City have got winnable games coming up.
Mm.
Liverpool have got harder games. We've got Tottenham next week. I think Liverpool and City play each other reasonably soon. So it's just going to depend on how we do in that time, really.
What's our run like for tough games in the next few weeks? I know that Arsenal are in there at some point. Have we got Chelsea in there as well?
I'll tell you, we've got Arsenal in 2 games time, I think it is. So, oh, my internet connection has gone. 1 second.
Technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties, yeah. So in the league. In the league, we've got Fulham away, obviously, on Wednesday. Sheffield United at home. Then Arsenal away. Then Southampton at home. And then we play Everton at home the same weekend that City and Liverpool play each other. So it's about winning the games in that run-up, or at least, you know, matching what City do. So it's going to be interesting. I think City-Liverpool is at Liverpool, I believe. So you're hoping for a draw, depending on, obviously, what's going on at the time. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But, you know, the scenario is that we stand a decent chance of staying in and around the top spots in the next few weeks. And if once you get into February, mid-February, you know, March time, that's really the business end, isn't it? You're getting to.
Yeah, and it might sound like a cliche, but, you know, you take every game as it comes. Yeah. And it's never more true than it is now. And the kind of build up to this, you know, sort of middling to sort of, we're building up to that kind of really important stage of the season now, where you're going to find out which teams are going to fall away and which teams are really there to stay the course. And so with this, yeah, like you said, there are winnable games for us. There's winnable games for Man City, of course, as well. But in recent years, we've been the kind of team that are sort of performing a bit, you know, and then kind of really relying on favours from other teams. And that's to get in the top four, sometimes it's been.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can just be that team now that just get on with the business. Just find a way to win. And it's so much easier said than done. But you've seen United do this over the past few weeks. And just find a way, grind it out, find a way to win. That Aston Villa game, for instance, you know, I was a bit nervy at times. But found a way to win. That Eric Bailly block at the end. The Wolves game, characteristic of that exact same thing, where you watch teams over the, you know, your cities and your Liverpools and stuff. You watch that hating City and Liverpool. I mean, I say hate, but you know what I mean? Like, not wanting, desperately not wanting them to win that game, and they're going to win it.
Yeah.
It's going to take a deflected goal, something like that. That's in years gone by, and as luck would have it, that's sort of us at the minute. I mean, I know not tonight, but if we can continue any kind of form like we've shown, then hopefully we'll be all right. Just kind of find a way to win, and the rest should work itself out. And that's just in terms of being a contender,
yeah,
to be one of those ones that stay behind, you know, stay the course for the season. But it makes me laugh. Actually, I was thinking just as we came back to talk about the league table. And I said, yeah, you know, I'd love to look at the league table with pleasure, because when you think about it, I think it was you yourself, the Premier League app. I think we're talking, I don't know if Van Gaal was in charge or Mourinho, the early Mourinho, and we had the Premier League app, we all did. And on the homepage of it, it would show you the Premier League table, but it would only show you the top 5 teams or something, just due to the fact it can't show you the whole table. And I remember you rejoicing once, like, you can see United! We're 5th! Look at that! And I remember thinking, wow, yeah. Ooh, that's us. Oh, yeah, but when you look back... No, but you look back, and of course it's ironic, of course. You're like an ironic sort of, woohoo, there we are. We're not 9th anymore. And that's really funny because, you know, you look back now and you think, wow, yeah. And not to get... We're not first indefinitely now, and that's it, and that's it for good, and that's the real quiz. It's just, for the moment... Not to go on about it, but the Gary Neville thing, at this moment in time, you know, we are top of the league, so it's... Let's enjoy while it lasts, lads.
We've extended,
you know?
we've gone longer than what people thought was going to happen, though. They were like, oh, we can enjoy this for a couple of days.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of days, and we can enjoy it for a few more days, at least.
Yeah.
So the first hurdle's done.
Yeah, let's enjoy it.
Let's just keep jumping over that hurdle.
Just don't be an insufferable git about it. That's kind of all it is. I'm not rubbing it in anyone's faces. This is just three guys appreciating the fact that United, at the moment, end up top of the league, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty good again. I mean, we might have a sketchy situation on Wednesday when we play Fulham, because City play before us, and if they win that game against Villa, they will be top, and we'll have to go and do the job of.
Okay.
But I believe Fulham is one of them teams that we do relatively well against in the past, or they are out there. I mean, yeah. our record against Fulham is positive, to say the least, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not played them too many times because obviously they've been up and down, really. There's a hiccup against them under Moisey, the 2-2 Old Trafford. We might as well just do the Fulham bit of this podcast now, since we've fallen into it anyway. But yeah, there was the 2-2 Fulham game where United put about a million crosses in and drew, and they just kept trying it and kept trying it and kept trying it, and eventually got a 2-1 lead before giving it away to a Darren Bent equaliser in last minute, which was devastating. I was there for that one, actually.
Yep, and it's ironic because Moyes' tactics that day made me cross.
Yeah. I think, yeah, Michael Carrick scored, didn't he? And it looked like, from where I was sat, it looked like the best goal ever. I think it was a massive deflection in the end. But yeah, other than that, we've been decent against them, as you'd expect. Especially, I think we beat them 3-0 away in Ollie's first season, when Martial and Pogba were just on another level.
The run.
Yeah, when the run was happening, when we just couldn't be beaten and couldn't stop winning before it all went to shit after PSG. Yeah, we were decent then. We beat them 4-1 before Jose got sacked in that month, when then a few weeks leading up to him going. So then you're never really too fearful of them, but they've come into a bit of form recently. They give Chelsea a good game last night.
Yeah, but Chelsea are pretty hit and miss out there at the moment. Like, you can't really justify Chelsea being a very good team at the moment. Obviously, no offense to
what they spent.
No offense to the Chelsea team at the moment, but they're not really doing a lot. I don't know why you will be listening, but if you are listening, nice to have you. They're not fantastic at the moment. So I think if you're gonna give Fulham a bit of, like, if you're gonna give Fulham a chance to get into the game, they're gonna take advantage of it and try and do that. But if we can just do what we've been doing in the past few weeks and just go out to score goals, then we're gonna take the chances and score the goals. We're fine, aren't we? Really? I mean, Chelsea they don't seem to be creating a lot of stuff unless you've got certain players on the pitch.
He's rotating a lot. Lampard, and he's got a big squad.
Got a very expensive big squad. But when you have to rely on like the player who's been there for a few seasons, who's not really cost a lot of money, like Mason Mount, to kind of dig out the shit, then
yeah,
that's not boding well for you. No, put it that way.
The signings haven't quite paid off yet.
No,
but still, it was credit to Fulham last night. They've been a lot better defensively because they looked, for all intents and purposes, down, like, in the early weeks of the season. You couldn't see them putting any points together, but I think they beat Leicester away, and they got a few other good, decent results, and, you know, they stand a chance of staying up now, so I think...
I'm still undecided about that. I think
they stand a chance.
I'd still classify as odd on favourites to go down.
Well,
along with Sheffield United
are definitely one of them, aren't they? But
yeah.
And West Brom,
Big Sam effect might just keep them up. You don't know.
I think we could do with a favour from him next week. I think they play one of the big teams, City or Liverpool. Anyway,
I think it's Liverpool, isn't it? No, it's City. They play West Brom play City next week.
What are you thinking ahead of Fulham, James? You thinking changes? Do you think he rests anybody? Does he prioritise resting players against Fulham to play it so that we can field strong team against Liverpool in the FA Cup, or to do it the other way around, do you think?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we sort of said off air, we were talking about the FA Cup game and wondering whether Klopp would sort of do a similar thing and sort of play a weakened team, because he tends to not... don't want to say like he doesn't...
No, it's well documented that he just doesn't really give a shit about the FA Cup. He fields not very strong teams.
They're always playing knob FC, though, aren't they? They play lower league.
But it doesn't matter. But if he wanted to respect the FA Cup, he would do by playing enough teams.
But now he's playing sort of like their bitter rivals, i.e., us. So it's sort of different. I don't know. I know the fans won't be there, but it's like the fans would want to, you know, like, for instance, if United played a near enough full strength team and he decided to put the kids out and you'd hope we won. I don't know. It's weird. It is really, really weird. And I was talking about this yesterday, actually, with some people at work. The FA Cup, not to go on about it, I'll try and keep it as short as possible, but the FA Cup sort of seems to be losing a bit of its magic, quote-unquote magic, because, you know, clubs are prioritising the league and the Champions League, and maybe you would, but I just think it is a bit of a shame, that kind of thing. And it makes me wonder, just to bring it right back to the actual point. I don't know, because we know how much importance that Ollie would put into a cup run.
Yeah, it's a tough one to balance.
Yeah, so it's like, but our squad is big enough that, I suppose, the odd change against Fulham. The odd change. I'm not sure if Bruno Fernandes might get a bit of a... Again, he's sort of untouchable in that side. He's like Maguire as well. These guys rarely get rests, if at all. So I don't know. But you might want to see Van de Beek come in and do a bit. You know, I'm a fan of him. So I don't know, really. I'm not sure.
I think Van de Beek stands a chance in one of them games. I can't personally decide which one he will make. I think maybe he'll make a few changes in each rather than a full rotation for both. I think that's probably the way to do it.
Yeah, because it's one of those, isn't it? You can get a bit too caught up in the... It's like someone asking you, because I've been asked this, is like, what would you rather lose? Like, you know, the FA Cup or like first place and things. And it's like, well...
I don't want to lose either.
You don't want to lose either, but you can sort of have both. I don't necessarily mean win the treble. I just mean it doesn't necessarily... By making changes, you don't necessarily mean... But mind you, you're not always playing Liverpool, are you, in the FA Cup? So, yeah, it is a bit of a pickle, as they'd say, because you could go up against Liverpool with a slightly weakened team and get turned over. I don't know. Luckily, it's not my job to decide.
No. What are you thinking, Matt? Do you think changes on Wednesday or changes on Saturday or both?
I think you've got to look at it from how Klopp's going to approach his Liverpool team, really. Because if you were Klopp right now and you sat looking at the table, obviously we're miles away from the end of the season, but you're thinking, oh, we're in the mix, but we're not where we need to be.
Not where they have been.
And for a guy who doesn't, again, like I've said, doesn't really respect the FA Cup as probably as much as he should do, maybe he takes the punt on it and says, you know what? I'm not going to feel my best 11. And if we lose, it's fine. Because I think he might think United are going to rest players as well, to concentrate on the league. So it's the same kind of situation where both managers are like, do we really want to go for the league, or do we want to like at least go half and half and have a bit of a chance in the cup run? The good thing for us is our second string or our rotation players are probably going to be better than the Liverpool rotation players.
I think they are at the moment, yeah, I think.
Because they've got a makeshift back line. And they've got some very good players off the bench. They do really impressive players. But what you got to think is, are they good enough to be playing week in, week out for them in the Premier League? And they're not. So the reason why he might play these players in the cup game is the fact that they're going to get a good run, and he's going to put a good hope in there that they're going to do well in the run in the cup against a team that he thinks that Solskjaer's going to play a lesser team in. But our lesser team,
bluffing going on here.
I think that's what's going to be. I think it's going to go down to a lot of bluffing. And I think our weakened team is probably just shy of what we've had today. So you take out the likes of like Fred and McTominay for Matic, maybe, or replacing one of them. So maybe just take McTominay out and put Matic in, and you take Fernandes out, you put Van der Beek in, you take
Tellez
for sure. You take Lindelof for, well, Bailly should be playing all games, but you take him out for Bailly, you put De Gea out, and you put Henderson in, and maybe you take Rashford or Martial, and you put Greenwood in, and you play Cavani. But
he's definitely got options.
There's loads of options there, but we're still really good going forward regardless.
Yeah.
So I think that he will make changes, and I think there will be four or five changes to the team. But I think it's going to be in the FA Cup game and not the Fulham game. Because I think he's going to go all out for the Fulham game, and he's going to want to make a statement to the fact we need to keep this lead by just playing our strongest 11 in the league. Anything that comes in between, we make changes for. Because the Europa League's not that important, the FA Cup's not that important. So anything but the league, we make changes.
Yeah, it could well be that, and we'll find out on Wednesday night, I suppose. Right, enough looking forward. Shall we look back on Mr. Wayne Rooney?
Wayne.
Obviously, well, unless you've been living under a rock, you will be aware that Mr. Rooney has a... I don't know why I'm calling him Mr. Rooney. Sorry, I'll stop.
I hope he gets a sir. Give him a sir. Why not?
Do you think he's well-behaved enough to be a sir?
Yeah, definitely not, but...
I'm not sure the... just dish them out to a...
anyone.
Prostitute and stuff.
Keep that in.
Yeah. But I'm happy. Yeah, but...
And I will be keeping that in.
Yeah, keep it in, because he's renowned for it, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Goal scorer.
That's in the past.
Rani Shagger, whatever.
That's in the past.
You want to discuss a past?
It's non-football related past that, though. But obviously, yeah, he's retired from football to take up the full-time position at Derby, which he's obviously been in for a few weeks on an interim basis. It seems like a bit of a flat end to his playing career, though, doesn't it? I think he was decent for him last season, scored a lot of good goals. I think he still had something to give, but he's obviously been preparing for management the whole time, going there, really, wasn't he? Going in as a coach. There's kind of an inevitable feeling that he was eventually going to be too big a presence to not give the job to at some point. If I think Philip Cocu was in charge, wasn't he? And he did poorly and he was gone. So Rooney's there, and with it, he hangs up his boots. So now we can look back on his... Well, we could have looked back on his career at any point, but now it's done.
It's the end.
It's the end, and what a player.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney, he is world-class. And I've had many arguments with a lot of people in the past about him not being world-class, and I say to them people, pish-posh, because he has been world-class in his career. And anyone who tells me...
I think he was at points, definitely.
And anyone who tells me he's not been, they'll be told to go somewhere else.
I think a lot of players, whenever they reach a world-class status, I don't think they often stay there for years and years and years, do they? But I think the Rooney around the time we were in Champions Leagues and stuff most definitely was. I think there's an argument that he gets in most teams in the world at that point.
Mm. Exactly.
Along with Ronaldo, I mean, they were kind of a double act, and... Obviously, Ronaldo went and did it on his own, but Rooney still delivered when Ronaldo went and carried us, which is also arguably a trait of a world-class player. So, yeah.
Carried like one of the biggest teams in world football.
Yeah,
he's not world-class, but he carried Manchester United.
We still got to Champions League finals a Champions League final without Ronaldo, with Rooney. So, James, you're... Overarching thoughts of Wayne Rooney?
Overarching thoughts, yeah. I mean, what a legend. He turned up into the game, on the Premier League scene, 16 years old. I'm pretty sure you all remember the goal against Arsenal, the sort of unbeatable Arsenal. They weren't necessarily the Invincibles at that point. But he takes the ball out of the sky and he sort of like shuffles over a little bit and he buries it in the top corner against David Seaman, of all keepers. And yeah, it was like, who is, and of course the commentator said, remember the name, Wayne Rooney. And we'd had a few sort of young characters turning up in the game and doing bits and dropping off and all of that. And since then, they really tried put, it was remember the name, James Vaughan. And no disrespect to the guy, because, you know, I think he broke Rooney's record of being the youngest scorer in the Premier League or something at that point. So people were very keen to jump on the next big thing. Freddy Adu. Do you remember Freddy Adu? He's the next big thing. He's had his picture taken with Pele. He's the next big thing. So it was really fascinating to see someone like Rooney go from strength to strength and actually take that sort of next big thing mantle, quote unquote, and run with it and just be powerful and big like a man at the age of 16. I mean, yeah. When I was 16, I looked like a 3-year-old, so you know. But yeah, and basically overarching things. So I'll keep this nice and brief. He, as everybody knows, it's not news to anybody. He was great at Everton. He then went to the Euros, didn't he, with England, and he set the Euros on fire.
We'd have probably won it if he didn't get injured.
Yeah, argue. That's a common view. If you know, he completely turned up, and it was pretty clear someone needed to sign him up quickly. One of the big top teams, if they weren't looking at him already. And of course, Real Madrid already had Beckham there and stuff. They were building a bit of an English vibe going on over there. I think they were looking. Chelsea were looking as well. Man United went in. Ferguson has an eye for talent, doesn't he? We had so many strikers already. I think we'd signed Alan Smith that summer, was it? I think. And I mean, don't get me wrong. There's no. Yeah, we had Smith, Saha, Van Nistelrooy was still there. A little guy called Van Nistelrooy, if anyone mm-hmm. remembers. But Rooney made an effort to. Sir Alex. Solskjaer was still, of course. Yeah. Where's my manners? But so, yeah, Sir Alex Ferguson went out and made sure that Wayne Rooney came as a priority and got him. He arrived, and then there was a long wait for his debut, and that hat trick on his debut in the Champions League as an 18-year-old, he was then, wasn't he? It blew me away. It was phenomenal. You knew, at least when that first ball went to him, you were like, oh, he's going to score this, but how? It's kind of one of them kind of strikers where you're like, ah. And he played like. This has been said a million times, but you know, he did play like the young kid on the schoolyard. No fear, nothing. And he would just shoot from distance. And that carried on later into his career, where he'd just think, oh, I fancy this. And I've not got that I've not got inhibitions or anything like that that the other players might. So he'd shoot and he'd score because he had the natural ability and all this. And anyway, he went on and just did marvellous things with the club and all that. And I was fascinated with the guy. He was my favourite player for years and years. But the only kind of sort of bleak point I've got about Wayne Rooney is that I think some other fans would sympathise with where I'm going with this. It's just that moment where he sort of turned around and said he wanted to leave. And not only that City were sort of a destination he was considering to go to. And I've not got really a problem with that because we've lost players before to big clubs. And I think Tevez had left for City. Under different circumstances, only a few months before that. But this has been discussed on, you know, Soccer Box with Gary Neville, between the two of them, which is fascinating, and I urge to watch. So I'm not treading any new ground here, but I'm just throwing my spin on it. Is that Rooney was like, well, I'm done, don't want to do this. He went head-to-head with Sir Alex. He's not the first player to ever do that, of course, but a lot of people that we know, actually, a lot of friends of ours, were like, I'm done with him. Wayne Rooney, that's it. I'm done with him. How dare he? And all this.
Pretty mad at him.
It was divided. And I was really upset, you know, and it's more a case of, I mean, Fergie's like a sort of granddad to us all, really, isn't he? Or, you know, the granddad we never had sort of thing. And Ferguson always had a real big grasp on the situation, and you could always tell behind the scenes and stuff. He always put a brave face on things. But that Champions League... we were playing Debrecen, I think it was, at home. That's how seared into my memory it is. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was Debrecen we were playing at home. No, Turkish team. Never mind. It's maybe not that well seared into my memory. But we were playing a Champions League game. Sir Alex had to do the press conference for it, and I've never seen him so broken down. Defeated. And he had to admit, yeah, Wayne wants to leave. He's told me he wants to go. And I was like, Wayne, no. What about the memories? What about the memories we've shared? And to be fair, like, I'm putting a funny kind of slant on it, but that a few days go by, it's looking like he's going to go to Man City, which was going to crush my heart to little, you know, to sort of absolutely flatten my heart, yeah? And a few other United fans, of course. And I hated that divide in the fan base as well. You know, in those few days, it's awful to see the fan base divided. And anyway, push comes to shove, and he stays. He signs a new contract. Ah, forget about all that. It's fine. I'm staying. But I never quite looked at him the same. It's like your missus, she's not cheating on you, but she's been texting other guys. Yeah. And we've got to forget about that now. Don't worry, water under the bridge. And he stayed, and to me,
analogy.
Yeah, just to round it up, I just think for me, after that, it was like, because I was naive and young, and I remember thinking, that's the first time. Because we grew up on like Giggs and Beckham, and even when Beckham left, he was like, yeah, I'm going. It's, you know, between me and Fergie, but I'm going, and he went. He probably didn't really want to go, but he did. But that was kind of a first sign to me, anyway, as a naive person, that players can come to Manchester United, but they might not necessarily like the club as much as the likes of Neville and that. They don't care. And yeah, that's the thing. And they're there to better themselves. And he definitely did that. You know, I've got another analogy, which might not necessarily be the greatest, but you've got to bear with me, and I'll pass. I'm done. I'll pass back to you guys. But I was sort of talking about Rooney, because of course he's the topic in the news at the minute. I said, it sort of reminds me of like Brock Lesnar a little bit. Like Brock Lesnar went into wrestling to sort of get to the highest point that he could and achieve the top things. When it came to really, you know, his dedication to the WWE or F at the time, well, you know. But he wanted to achieve it. And the thing is, Manchester United wanted to achieve the best things in the world. So did Wayne Rooney. And that meshed perfectly, and Sir Alex and his vision and all that. But all I'm saying is, look, Wayne Rooney has my utmost respect. It's nothing to do with that, but I just have that little downer with him when I was a bit upset with him. And like Ty, you've said, you know, you felt that as well for a bit, and you looked at him, and he was scoring the goals for us and all that. And it was like, wow, yeah, oh, we're allowed to like Rooney again. This is fine, and we sort of had to forget about that, and it's just a bit of a shame. But when history looks back on Wayne Rooney, he's England's top goalscorer, and he's Manchester United's top goalscorer, and there's not many people that can say that, you know, if any.
Well, so. there's no one who can say that. Because
exactly. So because I'll throw back to you.
He's the only one who does that. I mean,
yeah, I'll throw back to you guys. He's not Brock Lesnar, by the way. That was a terrible analogy.
No, it makes sense for anyone who doesn't follow wrestling. Brock Lesnar is a big...
Oh, yeah, he's a wrestler, by the way.
Who pretty much used WWE to get to the top of his career and then jump ship to UFC. And then come back to WWE and milk him for all they're worth. Which is, well, that's...
Those are Matt's words, not mine. I wasn't necessarily...
Yeah, Brock, I'm calling you out, pal. No. But you are right. It's like a little blip on, like, probably the best career you could ever imagine for a United player. But on a counter-argument, it fueled the fire to get another title. And...
Yeah, he stayed.
It might have been that thing that Ferg was like, oh, yeah, he's right. Like, we need to be challenging. We need to be doing more, and we will go on and do that. And we did. So,
yeah.
In his final hurrah, under Fergie at least, we got the best out of him. So,
yeah. I think his motives, I don't think they were necessarily about a big contract. Obviously, a big contract is nice for a footballer, especially when it's your, like you said on that Soccer Box program, it was his last big one in his career when he was, you know, late 20s. You want to make sure your peak years are just beyond where you're going to achieve things. And he didn't think that United were being ambitious enough with who they were signing. And that was, you know, fair point.
Well, that season we signed Bebe,
I don't think it was before that.
All right, I'm going to say, because that would make total sense. You can't be in order waiting for that.
Well, Tevez, I think was it Tevez and Ronaldo eventually in one point or another replaced by Obertan, Owen, Valencia. Like, yeah. It was just, you could see why he was wondering what was going on, and, you know, a fair play to him in that respect. There's a way to go about it, and I think there's a bit of an agent meddling sort of situation there as well.
I think there must have been a point where like the social media thing was taken off as well.
Yeah.
Where a lot of stuff was... Look, because Twitter, what year did Twitter start?
What
time? I think it was 2010, Twitter.
Yeah, about that, 2008.
So again, it's the prominence of like social media and that kind of arena of news being like spawned and like people interpreting things in different kind of way. Because I can imagine half the stuff that was said in the press probably wasn't reported that way on Twitter or on social media. So you've got just dickheads just retweeting or like manipulating stories just for the sake of clickbait, because it's a new thing that people are embracing this form of media that they're intaking. So, because obviously the way that he spoke about it on the show with Gary Neville, he's genuine enough, isn't he? He's not just like bullshitting his way through it, is it?
No, not at all. But it's the point I was going to mention, but I forgot amongst all the points I made, was that Neville, when he brings it up to him, he says, "Do you remember when me and Giggsy spoke to you in the gym about it?"
Oh yeah,
he goes a bit sheepish, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. But he said, you were told on no uncertain terms that, you know, that's not how you behave as a Man United player. And then, but the thing is, Rooney, you're right, yeah, Rooney actually was quite, I wouldn't say humble, but his perspective was not a bad one, where he was like, he said, I'm a lad from Liverpool. I'm not born into it like you and Giggsy and Scholes who were.
Anyway, moving away from the negative part, I feel like we've hammered that now. Let's
my fault.
Go to the... No, not your fault necessarily. Just, well, I covered it as well. Let's go to some favourite moments. Can you, have you got a favourite moment or a favourite goal from Rooney before we wrap up?
I was watching a YouTube video actually a couple of days ago of some of his best goals. You're gonna put the City one up there because it's just phenomenal. But you know what? You look at the one that he scored against West Ham.
Well, like,
just past halfway line, and you think the reason why that's good is the fact that it's not the first, it's not going to be the first time that he's done that in his career. You know that the talent is there for him to be able to see that and be like, I can score from here because the goalkeeper's off his line and I can put this away. He did it for United and for Everton and for DC United.
Yeah.
So pretty much three identical goals almost. And that is incredible talent, isn't it, really? Like, we obviously know that Beckham scored that goal as well again from the halfway line, but can you recreate that goal almost three times in a row for three different clubs? No. Wayne did, and it was incredible.
No, they're all good in their own way as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, not my favourite goal of Wayne Rooney's, but just, again, an appreciation for an immense talent and for his keen eye to put that kind of stuff away. Favourite moment? I'm going to go for the City overhead kick because it's just bold as fuck to do something like that in a Manchester derby and to hit it in with your shin. Good lad.
Yeah, James, what's your favourite?
My favourite goal or moment, because I guess the two are the same.
Both, yeah. If separate occasions, go for it.
To be fair, the moment when he... There's a couple of interesting ones in terms of moment. I mean, where he signed for us, I know that's like an obvious thing, but it was like, wow, this is the guy that did so well at the Euros. There's clearly something going on here in terms of this guy. Like, he's going places and we beat everybody to him. He's joined us. And remember the little kid that had that sign? Said, please sign Rooney. And then he turned up and it was like, well done, kid. But Rooney was only a kid himself, you know, 18 years old. But yeah, that was a really good moment to know that we'd signed him and see all them press shots of him with the United shirt and stuff. It was like, we might be onto a winner here. None of us could predict what were coming, but, you know, we knew this guy's got goals written all over him. And my favourite goal doesn't come too long after that moment, to be fair. The hat-trick goal against Fenerbahce.
Which one was his hat-trick one?
He took a free kick.
Free kick one.
I don't think we'd ever seen him take a free kick before, ever. But he'd got the two goals already. He announced himself with the first one. The second one was like, oh, now this is just overkill. He's on the world stage, Champions League of all things. He's only a kid, bless him. He showed up and he's sort of living that potential and he's like showing us what to expect in the future, all the rest of it. To get one goal would have been good enough on his debut. To get that second one, again, I can see it. It was like a sort of shot from distance. Again, like I said before, he had the confidence to do that kind of thing. Some of the players, maybe even Giggs, would have took that. I can picture where he is in my head on the pitch, you know, just outside the box. Maybe he takes a touch and Giggs wants to look up and find somebody because he's got that nous, you know. Mm. But Rooney just went, no, I'm shifting my body and I'm hitting this because I'm Wayne Rooney and I'm massively confident and this is my debut and I'm showing the world what I can do. And then, yeah, his hat-trick one. Yeah, it was a free kick, like just outside the box. And it was very, I remember it being sort of very close, like 25 yards out, something like that. And he just sort of, yeah, just bends it over the wall. And I think everybody in the ground, I wasn't there, but I think everybody in the ground and watching at home, as soon as he put that ball there, it's like, Rooney's going to take this. I think Gabby Ainsa wanted it.
Mm.
He had no chance of taking it. Yeah. But he wanted it. He was sticking
angle
around.
For him,
it.
Wasn't
it? Yeah. But it suited a left footer, I'd say, actually, looking back. But Rooney, yeah, he just took it and time stood still. Will he get a hat? There's no way he's getting a hat trick. There's no way. And the ball just floated into that top corner. And it was like, Wayne Rooney has arrived. And I remember thinking, as a kid myself at that point, you know, just thinking, this guy, I think we might have a legend on our hands here. You know, not knowing for certain, obviously, because you get carried away. Football's all about carried away. We love it. Football's all about getting carried away. And we love it for that reason. But just to sit there and go, we've got a new hero at Old Trafford here. This, and of course, they pan to that kid in the crowd with his thank you for Rooney sign. Well done, kid.
Good moment.
Yeah, excellent moment, yeah.
I think one of my favorites, it's hard to pick a favorite because he scored a lot for us. But I think one of my favorites that I always seem to go back to is that counter-attacking goal against Arsenal at the Emirates, where he's just running at an incredible speed, just trying to catch up with the play after start, being involved in the start of the move, and then just techs the ball in his stride, doesn't break stride at all, and just sweeps it in after putting such a full tilt running and just sweeps it into the corner. I mean, that season, I think that's the season we didn't win the league in between a couple of titles. So, big picture, it's maybe not one of his biggest goals, but just the technique, and it just epitomised him in the drive that he had to go and get there. But then also, yeah, like I said, the technique to just brush it home after being so full pelt was just amazing. And that was Rooney. It's aggression and pace and technique and a bit of class. And he just had a will to win, didn't he? And a will to achieve things. And he was phenomenal around that period. Obviously, it tailed off a little bit towards the end for us, but he still gave us great moments. He peaked early in his career, didn't he? So
yeah, is a record breaking free kick.
That was decent.
Whew. Yeah, it was good.
That was very good.
Yeah,
one against Newcastle, that volley where he was screaming at the referee 2 seconds before.
Yeah.
We talk about aggression.
Yeah, we're going to get brought off and he's fuck off. Yeah. Good goal.
So many. There's too many to mention, innit? It's hard to actually, now I think about it. I could have picked so many.
There was a really good one late on in his United career, his last season, before Jose moved him on, in a random Europa League game.
I know exactly the one you're talking
about. We lost away in Turkey and we were 2-0 down, or maybe 2-0 down, 3-0 down.
Something like that, yeah.
Fenerbahce,
sounds right.
Miles out, weren't he? Mm. And he just absolutely spanked it and got a consolation goal and just walked off like it were nothing. Because it essentially, the game was dead and it didn't mean anything, but it was a phenomenal goal. It's a shame it didn't come in a better situation, really. But
that's Wayne Rooney, though, makes the best of the bad situations.
Yeah, he had another one like that where I think we lost 4-1 or something at City. He scored an amazing free kick when he had that headband thing on.
Yeah. After his great hair transplant.
No,
it was a collision with Phil Jones in training, believe it or not.
Yeah, it hurt.
Obviously, because that was contention from one of my favourite moments, how a guy in his mid-20s can still come back and have a full head of hair.
So envious.
Yeah, I'm very envious. Envious. You're my hero.
You just wish you had thousands to pay for that, yeah?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So Wayne, if you're listening, I love you. Wire me loads of money so I can get a hair transplant and we can be twins. Cheers, pal.
Hair today, gone tomorrow.
Thanks, Wayne. Hair yesterday, back today.
Miracle grow.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we wrap it up? I think that's covered everything. Obviously, big respect to Mr. Wayne Rooney. Mr. Wayne Rooney, as I keep saying. Yeah, we'll be back with a podcast, I imagine, after the Fulham game, because can't give too many games a rest now because every game's massive, it seems, at the moment. So, yeah, Wednesday night, hopefully, we'll be back with you, back in your feeds on Thursday morning. Until then, enjoy remaining top until City do the job on Wednesday night. And then, hopefully, we can follow up with a win against Fulham. I've been Simon. He has been Matthew.
I've been Matthew. Thank you very much.
He has been Matthew this time. And he has been James.
I've been James. Thank you.
And we'll see you next time, guys. Cheers.
Bye. See ya.